Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. 1-800-636-8686. If you have been unable to come up with something interesting enough to get past less than zero, Adam Hawk, that's what he gives every fill-in host. Used to be 40%. Now, negative territory. I'm back tomorrow, 1-800-636-8686. Then the Sklar Brothers, Bill Ryder, will be with you Thursday and Friday. And then thankfully, Jim returns from vacation. And I trust the best in the business when he said, prior to departing for the return visit to Wisconsin, and you can follow Jim on Instagram at Jim Rome. He's giving you content continuously. No vacation from being a content machine. Jim's going to come back, and he's going to be in this chair all the way through Thanksgiving. So if this is a challenging time, let me do the PSA, because with no fall sports, reportedly, I'm going to need another side job. Nothing wrong with a little voiceover. Although when I walk into the voiceover booth, I'll be grabbing the microphone, and the guy's going to yell at me. In these challenging times, maybe I'm doing the Cabbage Patch a little bit too, because all my references are 1988. In these challenging times, hang in there, Jim. Only takes a lot of vacation because he gets a lot of vacation. I know it's a huge drop in the quality of the program. Jim is coming back, and he is always available to you on the gram. He's giving you a glimpse at basically what he's doing every day. So check him out on Instagram. Hit me up on Twitter. It's BW Weber. In all candor, not going to have a chance to take your phone call in this last hour because we did reconnect with Joe Sheehan, who was scheduled to join us earlier, now available in 20 minutes. We'll talk baseball. Are the Cardinals ever going to be able to play a game again? Check out Joe's great work at Sports Illustrated. 40 minutes from now, more NBA with just a handful of seeding games left. Play-in is going to happen. The gimmick in the West, 9 versus 8 on Saturday. If the 9 wins that game, then it's winner take all on Sunday. If the 8 seed wins on Saturday, it's over. That was incredibly boring. It looks like it's going to be Memphis and Portland. Steve Kuyler, basketballinsiders.com, will take us through the potential playoff matchups. Let's get back to college football. Again, with the caveat, we're going to be talking a lot about this sport again tomorrow. If you believe the reports that are out there to be true, the Big Ten is poised to make an official announcement that they are pushing back, postponing, canceling, whatever verbiage they want to use, all the fall sports. Most significantly, that means no college football, hoping for better conditions for player safety in the spring. And we signed on 2 hours ago, citing a report from the Detroit Free Press. And they mentioned a report from Dan Patrick, another radio icon, that according to their sources, the Big Ten has already voted to cancel college football. In fact, they had the particulars of this supposed vote that allegedly, reportedly took place yesterday amongst Big Ten presidents, 12-2, the tally to cancel football, Nebraska and Iowa, the lone dissenters. However, because everything this year is subject to change. Here's a tweet from a good friend of the program. You hear him on with Jim all the time. Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports tweeting within the hour. Just got a text from a Big Ten spokesman. No vote has been held by our presidents and chancellors. So I guess we're still, and I'm stealing from Pete here, on Big Ten. Watch, 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 watch. Clarity is coming. Maybe not tomorrow. We'll do Casablanca later at the movies with B-Web. But soon, for the rest of our lives, at some point, unless they want to continue to slow play this, we're going to get the definitive word conference by conference across the Power Five about their plans for college football. I'm not talking politics because I want to be invited back, but the president of the United States has weighed in, retweeting Trevor Lawrence, who I will give credit as the face of college football right now and the presumptive number one overall pick. He has been very active on social media defending what he and so many other players want articulated. They just want a chance to play. And I understand that. This is what they've done their entire lives. It's the most important thing to them. And for Lawrence, it's a final chance to bond with his teammates on his way to the NFL. Also, thoughtful perspective offered by the Clemson quarterback. And I agree with this to an extent that you can make the argument it's much safer for college athletes to be on a campus in a sports setting where they're monitored, where they can have peer pressure with their teammates saying, listen, you're not going to that frat house because you're not coming back sick and you're not infecting this entire team. So I agree with that point of view put out there by Trevor Lawrence. President Trump retweeting Lawrence with this observation from the White House. The student athletes have been working too hard for their season to be canceled. Hashtag, we want to play. So, surprise, surprise, the intersection of politics and sports continues. And if you don't want me to venture into the political realm, you can tweet the president to stop tweeting about sports, because I can't ignore what's going on in the real world, although we realize that everyone on social media, including the commander-in-chief, has an agenda. So where do we stand as of now? What's changed over the last 2 hours? It's a developing story. If we were on TV, we would roll the animation in a news setting, because that's another thing that's become mildly annoying for someone who works in the business. Used to be, another podcast with me, used to be with B-Web, that it had to be monumental news to be defined breaking news. Play the stinger, roll in the animation. Now, every time a cable news show returns from commercial, it's one more developing story, but it's germane, my favorite of the Jackson Five, not Tito or Michael, it's germane to what's happening in college football, because this is still fluid and evolving. But I think we know the end game, at least in two of the Power Five. These college football insiders, I believe, are not making this up. This is not hashtag fake news. In fact, I think it's being leaked purposely by officials within the Big Ten to motivate the SEC, who's leading, I guess, an opposing faction, to join them to have a unified front. Because this speaks to all of this dysfunction, all of the strange power battles that we've seen for decades in college football, everybody chasing a buck, the NCAA irrelevant on the highest level of college sports because they don't really have any jurisdiction over college football based on a Supreme Court ruling in the 1980s, coupled with the way television contracts have been chopped up conference by conference. The NCAA only exists now because the Power Five do not want to police themselves. That's it. And to be the organizing body of the NCAA basketball tournament, which pays everybody a lot of money. But a reminder, we didn't have March Madness in the spring. And this is feeling much like the sequence of events that we went through in college hoops in March. Ivy League says no postseason tournament. They shouldn't have one anyway, but everybody does now. And that was, at the time, marginally scoffed at. And then you know the rest of the story. The dominoes fell post-Rudy Gobert. And we didn't have March Madness, which was a significant financial hit. And that's what's motivating the need to play college football at some point, because college football pays the bills for everybody else. So just follow the money here. When plans change, and I think they will change first in the Big Ten with Pac-12 officials scheduled to meet tomorrow, but that was already on the agenda, and these power brokers have been consulting with each other throughout the pandemic. But when we get to an announcement from somebody, I don't think the Pac-12 wants to go first, it's going to be then, let's hope we're in a better place in the spring, but hope's not a plan. And yes, beyond the toy department of life, we all want to go back to our normal lives. And hopefully a vaccine is in rapid development. But who's to say when we get to the spring, anything is different? Or if you want to just, again, keep me sticking to sports, how does college football then coexist with men's basketball? Wouldn't that overshadow the NCAA tournament? And look, this would be a nice problem to have, but it's just one more unintended consequence of the ripple effect that's going on across the college football landscape. And what about the players? Trevor Lawrence keeps saying all the right things about wanting to be there for his teammates, although he was transparent that he had some doubts. Well, if you are in line to be a first-round pick and college football, the majority of the Power Five, decide to play in the spring, why are you playing at all? Knowing you have to go directly from that competition on the field, hoping not to get hurt. If you get hurt, much shorter window to recover than if you got hurt in the traditional fall setting. And what about evaluation from NFL teams? Because I do believe the NFL is going to be stubborn, at least for now, and not move the draft past the final week of April when it's scheduled to take place in Cleveland. So there are a ton of issues that have to be addressed before we ever see college football again. But the rationale for pushing it back comes down to a growing concern that the virus has real implications for those who have pre-existing heart issues. And if you are a university president, the steward of young men and women, can you really ask college football players to come back to a campus that will be virtually deserted? Best case, it's a hybrid of some students being allowed back, socially distanced in the classroom and the dorm, and virtual learning. Some schools saying nobody's coming back. But let's just say it's a school that has come up with the compromise. You're going to ask college football players to come back, run the risk of picking up a serious condition, perhaps bringing it home with them, infecting their families. Oh, by the way, they're unpaid labor. So you have the money dynamic, you have the liability dynamic, and I think there's a sense, too, that university presidents still don't know how to fully respond to the player empowerment movement we've seen, led by the Pac-12 and the Big Ten and elsewhere, and that if they're of the mindset that time would help them come up with a more savvy PR approach that will answer some of the requests of college football players without ever getting them close to revenue sharing, well, kick the can to the spring. And that gives you 8 more months, potentially, another half year to have a coherent strategy to address all of the player issues, hoping that the world is in a much better place and that we have better answers in response to the pandemic than we've had so far. And let's play college football because we need the revenue. But we can't pay those responsible for it because, well, this is an amateur proposition. These are student athletes. So it feels like every day there is a new wave of events and news to react to. And even within the last 2 hours of the program, this story continues to take shape. But when I'm back with you tomorrow, there's a real possibility we could get the official word from the Big Ten. I think next up will be the Pac-12, and then we're going to learn what the SEC is all about. And it'll be, I think, predictably, governmental officials getting involved at the public universities. You have Vanderbilt as the outlier, but what's the governor of Georgia thinking? What's Ron DeSantis in Florida thinking? I'm not getting political here, but we're back to the blue state, red state divide, and it's going to impact college football moving forward. And maybe the SEC thinks that because they already have the perception, they are better than everybody else in college football, and you cannot argue with the results. All of those national championships, all of those All-Americans, all of the players that you see performing on Sundays, maybe the SEC is able to recruit a few teams from the Big 12 or the ACC this year only, expand it to a pseudo-tournament Loveland football coaches, call it a tournament anyway, right? In the NFL, John Gruden, well, you get to the tournament, you talk about a guy. So the great philosopher, Yogi, was right. It ain't over till it's over. But it feels like every passing hour brings more confirmation that at least the Big Ten and the Pac-12 will be hitting the pause button, push college football back to the spring, and hope we're all in a better place. This program's about to get better because I'm going to expand the conversation. Coming up in 25 minutes, we talk NBA with Steve Kyler of BasketballInsiders.com. Straight ahead, we're going to hit the diamond. Is a baseball bubble coming for the postseason? We'll check in with one of the best in the baseball business, Joe Sheehan of Sports Illustrated. I'm Brian Weber, in for Jim Rome. Conversation never stops on Twitter. That is BW Weber. Emails rome@havatake.com. Hang with us. Much more to come as we roll on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Brian Weber in for Jim Rome. More of your tweets coming up at BW Weber. Weber with two B's in 20 minutes. We'll get you set for the start of the NBA postseason. It all gets underway with the 9-8 gimmick in the West in the bubble. Checking in with Steve Kyler of BasketballInsiders.com. First, let's talk some baseball. Pleased to be joined by Joe Sheehan. He's covered MLB for years. You've read his work for Sports Illustrated. Be sure to check out the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. Joe, thanks for taking the time. How are you?
Good. Weber with two B's. Was that your report cards?
Nice. Straight A's, pal. Straight A's. Catholic education at its finest. Here's why I got A's, because I got a B+, and then I got thrown into a locker by Brother McDonald, eighth grade. But you don't need my baggage from my formative years. All right, let's start with the Cardinals. As you know, it's absurd what's going on with this team. They've only played five games. Coming up, it could be a ridiculous stretch of 55 games in 46 days. Best case, beyond baseball saying something trite like, it is what it is. Joe, how can they claim to have any sense of competitive balance this year?
Well, they've punted the whole concept. The 60-game season, the regular season, it's just designed to have 16 teams there on September 27th that they can send into the playoffs. It's all about getting to the playoffs. And if some teams don't get a full season in, if some teams play 27-inning games, which I think the Phillies are right now scheduled for 14, they don't care about any of that. They're just saying, well, it's 2020 and we're just trying to get through a season. We could get to a point where a team just gets left behind. You know, we'll have better information on the Cardinals as we get through this week. But this is the nature of the virus. Once it gets inside a system, inside a group of people, it spreads rapidly. And you maybe only learn a couple of days later that somebody actually caught it, which you learned over the weekend with Lane Thomas, the outfielder. So this is a complicated situation for baseball, but it's less complicated if your only goal is to get to the playoffs. Once you've decided that's your only goal, all the stuff we're talking about doesn't matter.
And I share that mindset, and you got me precisely where I wanted to take the conversation. We have the soccer precedent. You had a couple teams unable to compete in the tournament in Orlando because they couldn't manage the virus. So is it logical to deduce at some point, maybe later this week, MLB just says, we're moving forward without the St. Louis Cardinals?
I think that's on the table. I think that's always been on the table, where one team, if you had to remove one team from the league, you could do it. Now, there's a question like, okay, what's the balance between just having them play 48 games versus not having them play at all? Do you feel, can you get to Thursday or even maybe next Monday and say, we think the Cardinals have eradicated the virus within their group and they can safely play the last 6 weeks of the season. We'll figure out what that looks like, but we're not going to take them out. And I think some of that's going to depend on the testing over the next couple of days here. One of the things that's happening is that we're setting precedents with each new decision, right? You know, they sat down the Marlins, which made it easier for them to sit down the Cardinals. Now the Marlins have come back with substantially different roster. Once you shut a team down, Now you're also setting a precedent. You're saying if you can't play for 2.5 weeks, we eventually have to start planning around you. So MLB has kind of been making it up as they go along, and I can't entirely blame them for that, Brian. This is an unprecedented situation, and I don't mean that normally we say that there's a precedent. We're just not. No, this is an unprecedented situation. The last thing baseball wants to do, though, is take a team out of the schedule. Remember, one of the reasons they're playing this year is to fulfill, or at least partially fulfill, some of those local television contracts. If you take the Cardinals out, that's 55 games that Fox Sports Missouri doesn't get to show, and that's going to be games that the RSNs in Chicago and Milwaukee and Pittsburgh, et cetera, don't get to show. So there are real financial reasons for them to keep trying to play.
I'm Brian Weber, in for Jim Rome, talking baseball with Joe Sheehan of Sports Illustrated here on CBS Sports Radio. I concur with everything you've just said. So it's all about October with the big TV money connected to the network deals on the line. What are you hearing about the concept of a postseason bubble for baseball since home field advantage doesn't mean anything this year? What if we get to a World Series and we're playing it in a bubble neutral site?
Let me back it up from there. What if you started the division series in a neutral site?
Even better, yeah.
And this changed over the weekend, and this story is still developing today. But one of the things that makes a bubble complicated is that you've got to quarantine everybody, then bring them to the bubble, then re-quarantine them. I can speak. Like, think about how long it took the NBA from the moment they started bringing players to Florida to actually get to play the game. So here's the thing, though. If there's no college football, I think that removes some of the pressure of baseball to stick to its original schedule. You're going to have networks desperate for content into November. So could baseball – okay, let's say the round of 16, the COVID round, the best of three all in one place. Those you still play at the home parks. But then you put pause for a week, everybody quarantines at home, and then 8 teams go to 2 neutral sites, you know, Los Angeles and Phoenix or whatever, wherever they're going to be. And they play the division series in those sites. And then maybe even play the LCS in those sites and then pick one of those sites to play the World Series. The catch is that it takes time to do that. It takes time to set up the quarantine to get everything done. So you would be pushing into November. But a whole lot of TV networks just lost their inventory. So maybe Fox will be more amenable to it.
That makes a ton of sense. Talking baseball with Joe Sheehan. It's always an emergency situation when our insider takes us round the bases. Joe, let's talk some actual ball. Yankees hope to be playing deep into October, although Giancarlo Stanton currently on the injured list. This is totally subjective analysis I'm looking for, not based on metrics or data-driven conclusions. Just from a standpoint of being physically imposing, are Stanton and Judge the most gargantuan teammates we've seen in modern history? I covered the Bash brothers in Oakland, and I don't think they were as big at the time as what we're seeing in the Bronx.
That's one of the comps. I'm trying to think of who Ted Kluszewski's biggest teammate might have been to put him in kind of a historical perspective. Remember, all players are bigger now, so relatively they look. But the Yankees look like a football team sometimes. Like a really good athletic football team. They really stand out, especially when those two guys in particular. But, you know, DJ LeMahieu is a 6'4 second baseman. I mean, they just have a lot of big guys. So, yeah, I'm trying to think, think about maybe some of those Reds teams. You got, George Foster. But I'm trying to think of who was, like, the second really big guy on the big red machine. It's just we build baseball players bigger now, and the biggest one. I mean, you didn't have 6'8 right fielders years ago either. So I'm trying to think Winfield. I mean, Dave Winfield was a big deal when he was with the Padres and then with the Yankees.
Right.
But again, there's not
and
that
drafted
second guy.
In every sport, right? Drafted in the NBA basketball, and the ABA.
Basketball, football, and baseball. And, back then, guys chose baseball when they had those choices. That kind of teammates, that kind of size. I mean, I think if you were a baseball fan in 1928, you looked at Ruth and Garrett as those comps. I mean, it's easy because it's the Yankees, but man, when you see those two guys coming up back to back, let's just say I'm glad I'm not a pitcher.
How about the old beast, Jimmy Fox, as we go back in the day in Philadelphia?
Mm-hmm.
I can't name
mm-hmm.
a teammate. All right, Joe, I've destroyed the program with all the nostalgia, so let me keep it going. And this, I know, is old man yelling at the cloud kind of stuff. So I have no problem with the softball rule being used in baseball. To be transparent, I call softball games. So I like the ability to go home quickly when I'm doing a college game. But for the life of me, I cannot understand when you have a runner at second base scoring position, nobody out. Why won't anybody bunt? I know it's not efficient. I know it's not cool, but, Joe, it works.
It doesn't, though.
Oh, don't run the numbers. Get me a guy to third base with one out. Sack fly, game over, or at least I have to go ahead and run.
Because, well, for the road team, it definitely doesn't make sense because you have to play for multiple runs because you're putting a runner on second at the bottom of the inning. But even if you're the home team, the thing, Brian, now, is all of these strategies that we talk about, bunts and hitting runs and steals, they all come from a time when the strikeout, you struck out maybe 5 or 6% of the time. Nowadays in baseball, hitters strike out 25% of the time. And with relievers on the mound, I mean, there are relievers in this game that strike out 50-55% of the batters they face. So when you talk about getting the runner to third and getting that sacrifice fly, when you and I were growing up, or when the generation before us was playing, before us was growing up, that sacrifice fly, that ground ball through the infield, was a lot easier to get. But putting a runner on third base now likely means he just has a really good view of the strikeout coming.
I figured you'd be wearing a T-shirt that said, "Killed the bunt." I knew where I was going with it, but I had to throw it out there. As we wrap it up, I'm a fill-in host. We probably won't chat for a while, so unfair of me to throw it out there, but you can handle anything. Let's look ahead to October and this wacky tournament with all these teams getting in and maybe a postseason bubble. Are you expecting a bizarre postseason, or are you sticking with chalk and think the Yanks and the Dodgers are clearly still the favorites?
Marlins, Tigers. Didn't everybody have Marlins, Tigers? Look, I think it'd be a ton of fun if a team like the Marlins or the Tigers made some deep October run. But I think the Dodgers are not only the best team in baseball. I think if we'd had a full season, we would have recognized them as the best team of the century so far and really one of the best teams that's ever played the game. They're that good. And for all the fun flukes are, it's like March Madness, man. Everybody loves that first weekend when it's, you know, the 15 seed and, you know, Siena's playing, whatever. But in the end, we want to see the best. So, yeah, give me the Dodgers over the Yankees in the World Series.
Joe, you're the best. I'm only 50, but I feel like my grandfather. Bunt, Phil Rizzuto was correct. Move the runner over, but I know the math says I'm wrong. Always a pleasure. We'll chat with you soon. Take care.
Thanks, Brian. Take care.
A scooter reference. He would leave Adam Hawk, talking about the legendary Yankee broadcaster, former Yankee, leave in the seventh inning to beat the traffic on the George Washington Bridge to get back to New Jersey. Afraid of lightning, too. Had a teammate struck by lightning. If there was lightning in the 20-mile radius of the Bronx, he'd run out of there. It's from my podcast, Love of the Game with B-Web on radio.com. Update on the way. First, a little business to attend to. Huge tweet. Darren and Cuna just got back from taking my dog to the vet where he had a thermometer stuck up his backside and poked with needles in each cheek. Yes, he had a better time than we are listening to Brian Weber. And that's sponsored. Another boost to my self-esteem. That was the huge... Brian Weber back with you on CBS Sports Radio. Winding down today, that means we are warming up for tomorrow's program. Could be a monumental day in college football. Be sure to join us then. But first, let's focus on the NBA with a great friend and terrific basketball journalist, Steve Kuyler of BasketballInsiders.com. Steve, what's new? How are you?
B, I'm well, my man. I'm doing very well.
I'm glad to hear it, and I have enjoyed every moment of what's going on in the bubble. I'll put the pom-poms on and be a fanboy for the association, although like a lot of the millennials, Steve, I'm trying to be a little younger as I get older, just want to be hipper. I was on Team Zion, as I think the NBA was when they came up with the gimmick of the 9-8 play-in scenario, so we understand now in retrospect, when Zion had to leave the bubble, there would be the conditioning aspect, the loss of staying in cardiovascular shape that came with it. But as we think about what the Pelicans could have potentially achieved, making it to the postseason, more practices, learning together on the floor, how much of a missed opportunity was this for Zion and the rest of the Pelicans?
It was a big one because they had the advantage in the schedule side. They were going to play the lesser teams, although I think that's probably a myth now that you've seen how some of those teams have played in the bubble. But the other part, too, is just you want as much experience exposure, not only nationally for a team that's on the low revenue side. You want the Pelicans to be that team everybody wants to watch on TV, and you want to buy the gear. So there's motivation and lost opportunity there. But you also want those guys to experience a little bit of pressure because, one, you need to decide if Alvin Gentry is your coach going forward. I don't know that they've gotten an answer to that in the bubble. You didn't get the young guys' playoff experience, which would have been incredible for their growth, especially going into what's going to be maybe a weird season next year. So, you know, lots of missed opportunity to capitalize on the stage, not only in terms of your business brand and all of those things, but also just kind of your young guys learning. And then do you keep the vets? I mean, that becomes the next part from a front office point of view is, do you sell off Jrue Holiday? Are you getting out of J.J. Redick? You know, what are you doing with some of those veterans? I don't think they answered all those questions in the bubble because that was going to be the question. What does this team look like next year? And I don't know that they got enough answers to make that real judgment from a front office perspective.
Gave me a good verbal head fake there. Talking Hoops with Steve Kuyler, BasketballInsiders.com. Steve, the Sixers also dealing with issues, specifically physical ailments. Ben Simmons shut down with the knee injury. Procedure coming up. Joel Embiid tweaked the ankle yesterday in that loss to Portland. Sixers have already trusted the process. What do you think the future of the franchise looks like?
They're a bit of a mess. They really are. B, you know, you think about it. It was supposed to be Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris, Joel Embiid. Well, now Ben Simmons can't be point forward. We're going to move him to power forward. Now we're going to see what we can do with Al Horford. We gave him a whole bunch of money. That's not necessarily working. Tobias is carrying the heavy load. Joel's the one you want to carry the heavy load. And none of it seems to be working. And I think the big problem here is Elton Brand, the general manager in Philly, kind of went all in. You know, he made some big, bold moves. Remember, he gives away a ton to go get Tobias Harris, gave away a ton to get Jimmy Butler, and signed all those big contracts. Joel's got a big number. Ben's got a big number. And it's a team that maybe right now is the sixth or seventh best team in the East, let alone, you know, not where they rank in the NBA. And that's just not going to be good enough. I think this team's primed for a blow up, that maybe they're going to sell off one of those pieces, whether it's Ben Simmons, whether it's Joel Embiid, and try to figure out how to rebuild this team. Because I think just structurally, it's not right. And, you know, the unfortunate casualty to all of it might be Brett Brown.
Steve, it feels like the Suns should play all of their games in a bubble, undefeated so far in Orlando. Draymond Green fined $50,000 for tampering, saying on TNT that Devin Booker is too good for Phoenix. He should leave the Valley of the Sun. Put the tampering issue aside, or recruiting on national TV done by Draymond. Was he accurate with that point of view? Should Booker take his talents elsewhere?
Well, one, I do think he's too talented for the situation we knew as the Phoenix Suns. But, you know, Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN did this great podcast with DeAndre Ayton, and he talks a great deal about just how much Monty Williams has changed the culture, and that the time off and getting into the bubble together has really been, you know, night and day difference, even from training camp at the beginning of the year, and who they are and who they're playing and how they're playing culturally. I mean, you're seeing on the floor, it's a team that's very motivated. They're very prepared. They compete to the edge of their ability, and everybody's starting to look like who they should have been. So I think a lot of the credit goes to Monty Williams.
And that was that. Poof. Steve, are you still there? We're having a few technical issues today. He's been silenced. Well, glancing at the clock, Uncle Brian will take you the rest of the way. Our thanks to Steve Kuyler. Adam, no need to reconnect with Steve. We've got time management issues. So put the phone down. I'll take us the rest of the way. Didn't I mention to you once I wanted to do 3 hours with no guests? But we had three great ones today. In fact, because Steve was so insightful, I'm going to make that our huge call, brought to you by Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges and helps if you need to fix them. Another way, Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for all the details. And it's a perfect setup because, looking ahead to tomorrow, I'm going to talk a ton of NBA. I have no life. That's been well established with all these references circa 1985. I actually, I'll hold it up. Maybe you can see it on camera. Came up with my own brackets in pen old man Ritt, because I'm just that confident as to how things could play out in the West. First, we have this manufactured element, a play-in, 9-8, all with the ambition of getting Zion into the postseason. How'd that work out? And we have to, I think, if we're going to be responsible with the analysis, look at Zion and say, he couldn't go running. He couldn't do any cardio when he was outside the bubble. I know he was dealing with family issues. I get it. But, man, as Steve pointed out, what a blown opportunity for the Pelicans. And maybe they're going to be blowing things up. And Lonzo Ball, I think, also underachieved in many critical situations. So the future murky in the Crescent City, but they have one of the faces of the NBA to build around if Zion can manage his body and stay healthy. I'm not saying it's a Sam Bowie, Greg Oden, Bill Walton situation. Very different. But Zion, just with his bulky frame, is going to have to make sure he's in peak condition, understanding when we get to, quote-unquote, a normal regular season, he'll have 82 games to round into the form he needs for the playoffs. But it felt like it was all in front of him, especially with the Grizzlies imploding atop the standings, locked into that 8 seed, looking down at everybody else. Memphis has only won once, and losing Jaren Jackson certainly hasn't helped the cause. But barring the Suns continuing this magical run, and some weird, funky things happening in the final two games of the seeding scenario, feels like virtually a done deal. I know Phoenix and San Antonio still mathematically alive, but it feels like Memphis versus Portland. Portland would have to win twice then to sneak in, and that's precisely the matchup the Lakers don't want to see. In fact, and this is the definition of irony, not coincidence. Most people say it's ironic, especially dopey sportscasters. Isn't ironic he hit a 2-2 pitch over the wall? No, it's just a coincidence. But it is, I think, a degree of irony that there was a report in TheAthletic.com that the Clippers desperately want the Blazers to be the Lakers' first-round postseason opponent because, A, they think they have a shot at beating the Lakers. B, worst case, they'll wear them down, beat them up, take them the limit, because the Clippers are already looking ahead to a potential showdown in the Western Conference Finals. But if that's the point, why didn't the Clippers tank more when they lost to the Blazers on Saturday? When the Blazers lost to them, they had an opportunity to lay down and lose that game. And they tried. No Kawhi. Paul George rested the last 5 minutes. Pat Beverly didn't play. Trez Harrell wasn't available, but I think they got so wrapped up in Lillard missing those free throws and waving bye-bye at him, they forgot the mission, thank you very much. That's a game they should have lost if they wanted to benefit Portland's ability to sneak into the postseason. But the components of this stretch run and then it's on to the playoffs are fascinating. So, yep, you can push back on Twitter, B.W. Weber, tell me that I am too much of a cheerleader for the NBA. I'm a mark, not even a smart fan. I'll self-report. I'm here for it. I'm going to watch everything that's left this week. Then it's the play-in. Then it's on to the postseason. Steve Kyler, BasketballInsiders.com, our guest. Also want to thank earlier in the program, Mike Jones. Who? Mike Jones of USA Today and Joe Sheehan of Sports Illustrated. A little more business to attend to. It's time to answer the Ask the Pros question. Were you the clones? Get to submit a question at cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Brought to you by our friends at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts. For all your car care needs, get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices, every day. The streak continues. Another upset. Not Bella B winning the ATP.
More Lady Clone.
Aspen Spin calling the shot. I'd like to win the ATP. Brian, what was the best part of attending Stanford? well-produced Adam Hawk, you know what's going to put a smile on my face walking out the door, because I have not talked enough about my backstory, my years in Palo Alto. Let me do it briefly. Beyond all of the great people I met, I used to be competitive, trying to match wits with some minds deeper than I. A former roommate of mine in 1991 got hired by a company called Yahoo. I go, what are you, nuts? What a goofy name. Retired at 30. The best part for me, and I'll put an asterisk, I don't think I mentioned this enough, I got into Stanford off the wait list. They let two people off the wait list in 1987. I won the freaking lottery, but the best part for me was I was the only guy dumb enough at Stanford who wanted to go into broadcasting. So unlike Syracuse or Missouri or Northwestern, when everybody's trying to be Marv Albert, I was the only one dumb enough to go down to the campus radio station, KZSU, 90.1 FM, and say, hey, I want to do the sports report. And I did a lot of stuff, including the College World Series, an NIT championship, and a ton of football. And it put me on a path that led to me being in this very chair at this moment. And now you know the rest of the story.
Scribbins has an answer.
Thanks to Adam. Thanks to Garrett. Thanks to all of you for participating on Twitter. I'm Brian Weber. We'll do it again tomorrow in for Jim Rome on CBS Sports Radio.